we have our first ever brother sister duo on the Mortuary Show. It's a little bit different though today. We have an infamous person here on our show. We have Bridget. So Bridget, if you want to give us a rundown, like if you're watching on YouTube, if you're listening on Spotify and you're watching the video, you might recognize Bridget, like, oh, she looks super familiar. Well, that's because she was one of the OGs on Girl Next Door show in the Playboy Mansion with Hugh Hefner, Bridget. And we have Ed, who's been on the show before. He's a mortician in Michigan, and somehow they overlap. Yeah, because they're brother and sister. So what a dynamic duo here we have today, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It sure is. I want to know, my first question is going to be, Ed, how many tips and how much advice have you gotten from Bridget from the cosmetic side of things when you're taking care of bodies? Are you calling Bridget being like, hey, I got a tough one, what would you do for your foundation here?
You know what? I never thought to ask.
Come on.
You know what though? The opposite is true. Like, I'll have a bruise or something and I'll be calling him, what, how do I cover this bruise? Like, what is, like, if he can make, you know, crazy things happen, magic happen with some of these bodies, like, how can I cover this bruise or this pimple or whatever?
And I'm sure you're busting out your color chart there, Ed, and getting all that stuff.
Yeah, got the wheel, lining it up. This is what you do.
Oh my gosh, that is too funny.
I don't know if you know this about Eddie, but before he started, oh, by the way, I call him Eddie. Eddie, do you want to say Ed? Eddie.
No, we'll go with Eddie. Come on, you're your brother and sister. You get to call him what you want.
Okay.
That's the fun of it.
So before he went to mortuary school, I mean, he had already been working at our local funeral home and stuff like that, but he really wanted to do makeup special effects. And so we went to Pennsylvania to Tom Savini's makeup artist school, and he was going to do like special effects there. So he's always been really good at he was doing the opposite at first. He was doing like crazy makeup special effects, right, like becoming the monster and that kind of thing. And later he would turn that into like making people look normal. But
full
still
circle.
He had that talent with the makeup from a young age. He was doing it in the bathroom at like 5. He's making himself look like a monster and stuff, and blood and stitches and burn marks and whatever.
Wow. So I think you have a little bit of credit to give to Ed for part of your career, maybe even for helping you out.
So I need to ask him to do my makeup sometimes.
Which I've done. We've done makeup for when we went to the makeup conventions down in LA before I joined the Army, and for one of your Halloween parties, I think over in Vegas, did some zombie makeup for you. It's always been just kind of fun.
Yeah, that really is. And it shows like your connection between each other. That's such a genuine, nice thing that you have each other, for the ups and downs and through all those situations too, growing up. I'd love to know what it was like. So you have two extreme opposite career paths here. You have someone that has gone crazy. She's not gone crazy, but she's had a crazy career, you know, being on television, Playboy Mansion, Hugh Hefner. And then you got Eddie who has served our country and then is now in funeral service. Those are very different. So what was it like, I guess, growing up? And did you have some of those similarities that led you down this path? I'd be really curious how that was.
For me, I tell people when they ask me, how did you, because I love all the paranormal stuff. I love scary movies. I'm into stories about death and dying and everything. And people ask me, when did you get into this stuff? Because it seems so weird for me.
Right.
People think anyway. But I tell people, I think I was born spooky because I don't remember a time where I didn't love this stuff. Even from a young age, when I was too young to be watching those kinds of movies or hearing those kinds of stories, I've always been interested and fascinated and wanting to know more and to, you know, hear all the ghost stories, watch all the horror movies. What, somebody died? How did it happen? What happened to them? Like, I've always just been very, very interested. And I don't know if Eddie was just born spooky too, or if some of my spookiness rubbed off on him.
Who's older? Which one is older? Or is that not allowed?
I'll claim to be. That's fine.
No, that's not fair. I'm the oldest.
Okay.
So wow, some of my earliest and best childhood memories revolve around Ouija boards and horror movies. That's just always the way it was. Yeah.
And hey, that's my fault.
I credit Bridget for that.
So that's probably how you went down your career. So you took those paths and made it your own. That's cool. What about your parents and everything in the paths you went down in your life? How was it for them? And I'm sure they're both very proud of it, like very successful in different sort of ways. So what was that like for you in that respect too?
You know, what's funny is I don't think that our parents, from our natural parents to step parents or anything like that, are spooky people at all, really.
Yeah.
I don't feel like they, you know, they're not like, so they're not really into horror movies. They're not really into paranormal. I mean, they are into it to a certain degree because we're interested in it. So they, you know, they're there for that and they like to hear our stories, but I don't feel like any of them are personally like, oh, you know what we need to do is watch this new horror movie that came out, or oh, you have a good ghost story. I mean, Mom, I guess, likes a little bit of a spooky story and everything, and she's a little, I guess, would be the closest, but even she's not like all in on the paranormal and the spooky and the,
you know what though, sure. I give them a lot of credit because we were able to do that. I feel like as parents they just had to be more pragmatic, you know. They were the providers, you know, which every parent is, but, you know, from a very working class family, there wasn't a lot of, a lot of extra when we were growing up. So
you made your own.
We're very blessed.
Yeah. That's great. That's the way I feel about myself too, is like, I feel very blessed to be in the situation I was and to get into funeral service and help families. It just means the world to me. And all that stuff does correlate a lot. I think I want to ask the question that everyone wants to know for you, Bridget, like, is the Playboy Mansion haunted? Is it haunted there?
Oh, yes. The million-dollar question.
Okay. Yeah. All right. You got to lay it to us. Come on now.
Yeah. So the OG ghost story there is the house was originally built by Arthur Letts Jr. Family owned what was called the Broadway Shopping Center or Shopping Plaza in LA, which later turned to Bullock's, which then turned into Macy's. So they were the original owners of the home, and there is a ghost story that one of the original Mrs. Letts's, and we don't know if it was his Arthur Letts's Jr.'s mother or his one of his wives, because he was married like three times, so we don't know which Mrs. Letts is rumored to have jumped, fell, or was pushed from the balcony onto the marble floor and the mansion. And so people have claimed to see her ghost for like way longer than I was there. People have been saying that story. And I even did murder mystery themed birthday parties off of that like ghost story, and we recreated that scene and stuff. But for me personally, what I experienced, I can tell you a couple of stories. From my personal experience, I was in my room one night. Well, let me back up. Before that, I was in my room on the floor. Holly was another girl I live with there. We had our scrapbooks all over the floor. We're just busy. It's a Saturday afternoon, scrapbooking. Mm-hmm. And my TV is on just for background noise, and the remote's somewhere on the bed. And I'm, you know, talking about my love for all things spooky. We were probably watching some sort of, you know, most haunted show or something on TV. And she's like, you know, I think it's fun and everything, but I just don't really believe, like, I need some sort of proof or something. All of a sudden, my TV went to like full volume, like on command. Whoa. And I was like, oh my God. And I jump up and we're both covering our ears and I'm looking for the remote everywhere. And I find it on my bed and I turn it down and I'm like, that was crazy. And other times in my room, the TV had jumped channels without me even noticing. Like I would have something normal on that I would be watching, and all of a sudden, like the basketball game is on or something. And I'm like, what? How did it change to the basketball game? That's weird. And I wouldn't think anything of it. And we had a whole video department upstairs in the attic of the mansion. Uh-huh. Like Hef had a whole team of like TiVo people, but because it was before there was like TiVo. So they were actually up there like recording. So I thought, well, maybe they have access to my TV from up there. Like maybe they can, they accidentally turn it up or they can accidentally change the channel.
They're
so
trying
one
to get
day,
you to watch basketball.
Yeah. So one day I went up there and I talked to them about it and they were like, we don't have access to your TV. They were like kind of like shocked that I would even think that. And yeah. They're like, no, but we can come and take a look at it and see if there's something wrong with it. And there was nothing wrong with my TV. But then weird. One day I had actually gone to North Carolina to visit Eddie. And on the way home, we stopped in Atlanta and I got my dog, who people, if they know me from the show, know Wednesday. And she was my total baby. She was a little tiny little puffball. Brought her back to the mansion that night. I set up like a little fencing area with all of her stuff in there, her water and her pee pee pad and some food and toys and all her stuff. And me and my sister and my friend Stacy are all sitting on the bed just having a glass of wine. I'm telling all about our trip. My sister wants to go to bed, is bored out of her mind, and wants Stacy to leave. And I'm like, too bad. I got to tell her all about our trip. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, which is where it usually happens, all three of us, my sisters and me and Stacy, saw something standing in my closet doorway. And ooh. I gasped and then turned to look. And when I turned to look full on, it's gone. And both my sister and my friend Stacy are total scaredy cats. So my sister was just like, started crying and covering her eyes and said she doesn't want to know. And then Stacy was like, I don't know if I want to know, but what was it? What was it? What was it? What was it? But what I saw was a woman, and she wasn't a Victorian ghost like you might think at right. the mansion, or like so many people say. She was a modern day ghost. She was very thin. She had black kind of stringy hair, very, very pale. She was wearing like a white oversized t-shirt and like black kind of acidy washed jeans. And she was just kind of standing there, kind of like looking down sort of. So I think she was looking at the dog. And I recognized her, at least I think I did in the flash of the moment that I saw her out of the corner of my eye, as this woman that used to be one of Hef's social secretaries named Joni. And she was very much like the house mom and made sure everybody was doing okay and the pets were taken care of. And she was just very much loved everything about the mansion. And I met her when I very first came to the mansion. And then I left. And when I came back, I found out that she had passed away. And she had cancer. She was one of those people that didn't believe in going to the doctor. Yeah. And once she found out, it was just sort of too late and she was gone pretty quickly. And I am pretty positive that that was her. And I think the reason that she was there was because there was a new addition to the mansion and she was just coming to see the new puppy. That's what I think. Like, I think it was
just making sure everything's clean, everything's above board. Whoa, that's creepy. That's a weird, weird experience.
But what's fascinating about it is that three people saw it. It wasn't just me.
Right, right. Oh my gosh, it's like one of those things. Like, if you had that on tape, you know, what would you see? Because you see all those ghost shows. Didn't you make an appearance on some ghost show at some point? Didn't you?
A few of
before?
Them.
Right?
I've been on Celebrity Paranormal Project way back in the day, like in 2007. It was 2006, actually. Okay. And then I did Ghost Adventures with, you know, Zach and Aaron and those guys.
Nice. Wow. Yeah. That's super creepy. Ed, you go. What's your crazy story that you've seen?
You're going to make me follow that?
Yeah, come on. I know you got some weird stuff. Let's go.
He's got some good ones.
I think for me, I've never actually seen a ghost, and that's not an invitation to any ghosts around. when I was in the Army, we were in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
And, you know, New Orleans is obviously a very haunted and creepy place already. But being there when the city's just experienced a tragedy and completely evacuated and the streets are empty and there's no power, it's a whole other animal.
Right.
And we were doing a night patrol because we got sent to do security patrols and just walk the city streets, basically, as an infantry squad. And anyway, we were out there in the middle of the night and we heard people in an abandoned house. And not a house that was damaged by the hurricane necessarily. It was either under construction or was just that dilapidated. You know, the windows were out, and so you could clearly hear people inside moving around and talking.
Right.
And so, you know, we weren't allowed to have our magazines in our rifles unless we were actually using them. Mm-hmm. And so we unslung their rifles. A couple of us dropped magazines, and we went inside, and we're walking around with our flashlights and didn't find anybody on the first floor. So we went up to the second floor and walked around, cleared that whole building, and not a person was found. And our squad was surrounding the building. It's not like they left. So,
whoa.
You know, that with the you know, that feeling that you can't describe, you know,
yeah,
those things combined, it was just like, you know what? There's nobody in here. Let's just leave.
I know that feeling. I got a good story for you. So I was in the prep room taking care of somebody. I was embalming, and it was like a Sunday night or something. I knew all the doors were locked. No one was there. I'm in the prep room. I think I was listening to some music or something and just in the zone. It was later in the evening too. And I hear this noise that comes outside the door. I'm like, that's weird. Like, I know no one's here. So I open up the door. I said, hello, anyone there? Like, I keep my scrubs on and my gloves. I'm not taking that off. You know, it's a pain in the butt, Ed. So no one's out there. I go back. I'm doing my thing. And I hear another bang, bang. Like, it was around the corner. I was like, this is so weird. Like, I'm not just imagining this. I know I hear something. So I go out there. I'm like, hello, who's there? Like, what's going on? Nothing. No one to be found. I'm like, this is just now I'm turning up the volume to level 10. I'm like, I don't want to hear anything again. 2 minutes later, I kid you not, I hear a bang on the prep room door. And I'm like, someone is here. This is not a joke. Like, I don't know what's going on. I go out there and I just so happen to have a softball bat outside the door. Coincidence. It's not because I'm trying to fend off ghosts, but in this circumstance, it would have worked out. So I go out there. I'm like, who is out here? I'm not fucking around. I'm going to come and get you. So I'm looking out. I go down the hallway. There's no one there. I'm in the garage. There's no one there. Flower room, nothing. There's no one around. I'm like, I know I heard something. This is crazy. Then I go to this little bathroom that's off on the side, and I hear this little snickering, I'm like, what is this? And I bang the bat on the door. It was my freaking brother that snuck in just to try to scare me because he knew I was there alone.
Damn it.
Oh my God. Here, I thought this was a real ghost story. I was into it.
I know. I'm sorry. He got me good. He got
me. It was
me
about really to be good. A true crime story.
It absolutely was. Oh my God. All right, Bridget, keep going. So I know you've had some more experience. Like, you gotta give us more of that juice. Give us more of the ghost stories, that paranormal, because I mean, I think we all have that sense. If you're in funeral service, you know that there's something beyond us that's going on a lot of the times. And you could feel that like Ed was saying too. Do you have any other good interactions?
Yeah. I just remember too, being in our local funeral home, like sometimes at night, like when Eddie was there and stuff, I just had this like very spooky vibe, and I was always afraid Eddie to go into the bathroom. I think we talked about that before. The women's room. I don't know. There was something spooky about the ladies' room in that funeral home.
One of those old style ones too, where there's like, it's like a living room before you go into the actual bathroom.
Oh yeah. That's how ours was too. It's like a powder room, and then you go in, and then it's the bathroom. Oh yeah.
There's something extra spooky about those for some reason. I don't know what it is.
That's for sure.
Well, I would say probably the most, I mean, I try and put myself in paranormal situations as often as I can. So I've been
You're the opposite of most people.
I've been a lot of places, but I would say the place that I probably was my scariest and that I had the most things happen, it was the Myrtle's Plantation in St. Francisville, Louisiana. Okay. I'd wanted to go there for so long. I've read every book about this place. I knew all the ghost stories about it. I knew so much about this place. And finally, I got to go for my birthday 1 year. We were staying in New Orleans. We just rented a car. We like drove out there, and we're going to stay one night, and we stayed up till like midnight. And then I started pulling out all of my ghost hunting stuff, and Nick, who's my husband, but he is not really all into this stuff. He's a good sport though. Like he'll do it with me, but he's not like super convinced or anything.
What does your ghost material entail? What does that include? What are you pulling out?
I have a whole bag of stuff. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, I have a whole bag of stuff. So I have, you know, EMF meter. I have voice recorders. I have what's called the Boo Bear, which is like a bear that has the EMF and detects temperature changes, and it also like tries to communicate, like do the EVP sessions and stuff. I have motion sensors. There's so much stuff. There's so much stuff in my bag. Lots of things. But anyway, I pull out.
Are you
like
carrying that with you 24/7? Like, is that part of who you are? Is it in your car at all times?
No,
it's obviously
I'm
right next to her. Were you just looking at it?
Yeah, I know. It looked like you were peering down. I was like, do I pull this out?
Yeah,
we got two more tissues here. They probably got ghosts to just like hover over them 24/7.
Well, it sits right here. Yes, but I don't leave it in my car because I live in LA, so it wouldn't be there for very long. But I pulled out some of the stuff, and so there's a big mirror. Oh, by the way, we're the only ones that have access to the whole front entrance of the house. They kind of separated off that way, and the room that we were staying in has access to the steps and the front foyer, or however you say that word. Foyer,
you're on it.
Anyway, so the mirror in there is supposed to be super, super haunted. People see things in the reflection and stuff. And then a man died on the 17th step in there. So, and you can hear footsteps going up to the 17th step, and then they just stop. And we actually heard them. That was one of the first things that happened, but not yet. So I'm sitting on the 17th step with my voice recorder, and I'm asking if there's somebody here, if you could give us a sign, whatever. And Nick has the EMF meter, and he's like over by the mirror doing this whole thing. And there's nothing. I mean, not even a blip on the EMF meter, to the point where I'm like straight up bored. I'm disappointed. I can't believe it. Like this is like the most haunted house in the world. And we can't even get, like, I don't even know. Is my EMF meter even on? And I'm like clicking it. Yeah, it's on. Batteries are fine. Whatever. All right, let's just go to bed. So I always have to go to bed to a TV. There's no TVs in the Myrtles plantation. So we're passing the iPad back and forth, playing games on it and stuff. And then all of a sudden we hear boom, 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 boom up the stairs, like somebody with big boots running up the stairs. And we know nobody has access to that area but us. So I jump up and I run out and I open the door. Nobody. I'm like, that's crazy. Jeez. We heard the phantom footsteps. So I was all excited about that. And then all of a sudden things just got like really weird. And I'm trying to fall asleep again. And I'm listening to the frogs. There's like a ton of frogs outside. And I'm just listening to that, concentrating on them. And all of a sudden they just stop. And it's like silence. And then the room got super heavy. And all of a sudden there was like chaos around us. We could hear people running up and down the stairs, what sounded like kids playing, furniture moving above us, but we're on the top floor. Like, it just, like, it was so scary that we were holding on to each other. And every time we'd hear something, we'd go, oh my God, did you just hear that? And he'd be like, yeah, I heard it. Did you hear it? Yeah, did you just hear that? And usually I'm like up and investigating. I was so scared. I didn't even want to open my eyes because I was positive there was somebody in that room with us.
Oh my gosh.
It was so scary. And it went on. And then all of a sudden we heard like a electronic beeping noise. And so we both sat straight up and we're like, what the hell was that? And he had left my EMF meter sitting on the bedside table, and it was lit up all the way to red. It was just like going back and forth all the way to red. And he's like, it's your EMF meter. But I know that my EMF meter doesn't make any noise. It was lighting all the way up, but it doesn't make noise. So then the next morning, well, let me back up and say this all went on for like an hour. I asked him, what time is it? And he said 3 something. And it went on until like 4 something.
There's no way you could sleep after that.
Well, we did. But what's weird is at 4 in the morning, all of a sudden, I just felt it was over. Like all of a sudden, every muscle in my body relaxed. The air seemed to clear up and it got like breathable. Like before, it smelled like, it felt like we were being smothered. And all of a sudden the energy completely changed and it just felt fine. And we did fall back asleep for a little bit, but at 7 a.m. they do biscuits and gravy in the office thing. So we wanted to make sure we got
nothing
in on
wrong that. With that.
So we went over there and there was this older couple, and they were like, was it you guys making all that noise last night, moving furniture around and stuff? And we're like, it wasn't us. And the people that were like doing the biscuits and gravy that worked there and stuff, they asked us, what room did you stay in? And I told them, and they said, oh, you actually made it through the night. The last two people that stayed in there didn't make it through the night.
No kidding. So the other people that were there, they hear it. Obviously, other people are going through the same experience too. Gee, I mean, that's, do you think that because like you're trying for it and like trying to summon, they feel more inclined to like come out? Or is it just like anyone that would be, you know what I'm asking? Like that's what I'm curious about, because like, if there's anyone here, give us a sign. Like, do you think that gives them more of a inclination, or if it's just like whatever they're feeling?
I think it's whatever they're feeling. I think that the Myrtles Plantation is so used to having people come there and do investigations that they know what's up. The other wow. side knows what's up. And you know, I don't know. I don't think me inviting them, well, it depends. I think that in some situations, me inviting them does give them the invitation to do that. And I think in other ways, it doesn't matter whether you give them that invitation or not. Obviously, other people were experiencing things, but blaming it on us being noisy.
Of course. Classic.
Wow. But I loved it. I want to go back. It was incredible.
That would scare me to no end. I would be up all night. There's no way I would sleep ever there.
I love that that old couple immediately blamed it on you, as if you're moving furniture around the hotel room.
Not even
a hotel, like a plantation room at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Trying to make it a little bit more feng shui for
us. You know, just something a little more like home for us. That's all.
Well, I will tell you that so much stuff was happening that at one point Nick said, that's my husband. He's like, they have to be doing this, don't you think? Like, it just seemed so, but I do not think so. And I don't even think there's a way. Like, it wasn't just you could hear furniture moving. Like, you know how, like, if you're, like, if somebody were above you right now moving furniture, you can almost sort of feel it too.
Like the rattle, right? Yeah.
Like, it was that. Like, there's no way that they're just making this up, you know? And then if they were, why didn't they make it up when I'm asking for it?
Right, exactly. Wow, that is intense. My gosh. I want to know more about Ed going to mortuary school and what role you played in that, Bridget, and how that had some overlap too.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I graduated high school, and the next step for me was mortuary school. And we had the orientation that we had to go to in San Francisco. We grew up and lived about 2 hours from the city. And so Bridget volunteered to go with me and drive and all that. We went out there, and she got to see an embalming video that was filmed back in the 50s, which I thought was even I thought that was kind of cool, because it's just nostalgic.
And, right, Bruce, and probably gravity embalming and all that good stuff. Like, you're seeing some intense things.
I think there. Some of the original Porta Boy machines are in that video.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah. It was a high class place. What did you think about that video, Bridget?
I thought it was fascinating. It didn't like freak me out, or, you know, I mean, I knew that doing that kind of stuff wasn't anything that I was personally interested in doing, but it didn't freak me out. And I was fascinated to see how some of that was done. What I loved most about it, though, is I don't know if you're familiar with the mortuary college in San Francisco, but the building was incredible.
Really?
So I was super fascinated to be there, and we got to get a tour of everything. And so, I mean, walking around that building, and I could definitely tell that was haunted too. I never got to do an investigation or anything there, but I could definitely, like, you just get that feeling and that vibe from it. I think Eddie knows a little more of the history of that building.
Yeah, it was built by the Riley family in the 1920s. It was one of, you know, your first quintessential mortuaries.
Yep.
You know, where, you know, everything's being done under one roof, including the embalming and everything. And there was multiple chapels, and one of them was just really, really huge, had a big organ loft. The Riley family lived upstairs, and that's where the college would eventually be. So, yeah, like our third semester classroom was in their dining room, you know, with the whole fireplace still there and all that. And the organ loft had all the drying boards, you know, the wicker drying boards, and home embalming kits and stuff. You know, that was the storage area for all that stuff.
Wow, that'd be cool.
Yeah. And so the funeral home was still active as a funeral home, and then the college was upstairs, but we had one of the small chapels to use for ourselves because the college actually ran its own student-run funeral home. We actually served families.
No kidding. Wow, that's like a great way to do it. I think everyone should be on that because that's how you get that hands-on experience with actually helping. I think school, sometimes it just gives you like the smallest taste, or it's like the background knowledge more than the hands-on experience that you really need.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we actually met with the families and, you know, we handled all the services for under $1,000.
Wow.
You know, the only stipulation was you have to let us do the embalming and run a visitation and a funeral for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so all that was happening under one roof in that old building, but unfortunately, they closed that. The funeral home that owned that building closed that location. The college got evicted, essentially displaced.
Oh no! So,
and the building got demolished, and today there's condos there. Wow. It's just such like every other funeral home in San Francisco. That's just amazing architecture, amazing history, and just torn to the ground.
Our original location was very similar, a similar thing. It got bought out and then knocked down, and now it's a Lululemon. So there you go.
Oh my gosh.
A Lululemon.
Sure is. Lululemon and a bakery, I believe, because it was big. It was like a two front property, and now that's what it is, which is funny. Whenever I have my friends driving around and they say, oh, I'm like, oh, that's the original funeral home. They're like, that right there, the Lulu and the bakery? I'm like, yeah, that's what it is.
That's you interesting. You tell them
the baker's oven used to be the crematory.
Oh my God.
Just make up stories.
Bridget, were you in the mansion then, like when Ed was going to school? What was that timeline like for you guys?
No, I was at the mansion while he was in the Army.
Nice. Wow.
While I was in school, though, Bridget lived halfway between where we grew up and San Francisco. And okay. So I lived with her for a couple of semesters.
Nice.
With her and her husband at the time, and to make my commute easier.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a cool parallel because, you know, I was following my path, and right about that same time is when Bridget was, you know, applying to, is it applying or auditioning? What was the right word to be in
Whatever,
Playboy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, like, what was that like, that journey for you, Bridget, then? Like, how did you decide on that? And I'm sure it was a challenging, tough thing that you had to go through to get to that level. What was it that made you go down that path to coming into Playboy? And what was it like, that whole process?
It was something that I aspired to want to do since I was really young, which sounds weird, but I saw my dad's magazines and thought the girls were so beautiful and I wanted to be like that one day. And yeah. I never really knew, this was way back before we had like the internet and stuff like that. I didn't even know how you apply. And one day, as a joke, somebody sent us a Playboy magazine. You know, I don't know if you remember, but there used to be little cards you can get in the mail and be like, oh, 6 months for free. And you could put someone's name on it.
Of course.
Yeah. Ha ha. It's funny. They're getting Playboy magazine or whatever. And somebody did
Lucky
that.
Lucky them.
Yeah. Somebody did that to us. And we got a Playboy magazine. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, obviously I could have gone to the liquor store or whatever and bought a Playboy magazine, but I never really thought to do that. And yeah. So we get one to the house and I open it up and I'm flipping through it, and it said that they were doing a big search for their millennium playmate.
Okay.
And they were doing casting calls all over the US, and so they were going to have one in San Francisco. So it was like, call this number and set it up. And I call and it says, you know, bring a bikini and heels and show up at the Westin St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco, which is also haunted. Yeah. And so I went there and did the audition. And like a couple of weeks later, I got a phone call from them saying, we think you have playmate potential. I want to fly you down to LA and stay at the mansion and do your hair, makeup, and do a whole photo shoot, meet Hef and all that stuff. And I was just like freaking out, so excited. And I went and did all of that. It was the most incredible experience ever. And then I waited for a year and a half to find out, and And finally, I got a letter saying I didn't get it, but I still had that bug and I didn't want to take no for an answer. So I, and they were using my pictures for other, like what they call the flats. They're like extra editions for the magazine and, okay. and like as like little filler in the magazine and stuff. And I was like, if they're good enough for that. So took my savings, moved to LA, and yeah, now I've been on the cover four times and
wow,
multiple That's pictorials, amazing. Lived at the mansion for 7.5 years and Girls Next Door TV
right,
show.
Right, in the persistence. That's huge. That's great.
Yeah, what don't take no like? For an answer.
Right, you shouldn't. That's a good thing. That's a good note. What was it like being on television then? And did you have to do a lot of training to get into that? What was your day-to-day like too, having probably cameras around you 24/7? That had to be a lot for a number of years.
There's zero training. They just show up one day and they're like, all right,
go.
We're filming. Luckily we had pretty busy schedules and things like that, but it was a learning It was learning for everybody at the very beginning, from the producers to the camera people to us and everybody. But it was a successful show and people loved it and people still love it today. My co-host and I, Holly, she was also on the show. We have a podcast where we take each episode and we break it down. And we started from, well, we actually started the podcast with before we even started doing the show. Like, how did we get to the mansion to begin with, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we take each episode and break it down. What was really happening? What did we really say? You know, when did this really happen in the time frame of things? Because things are all out of order on right. TV. And how did we feel about it then? How do we feel about it now? Like all, we just break down every episode. And we have a huge fan base still. And people love it. People just love it.
That's great. I mean, you really built yourself, your career up by doing that. And then now continuing on that path is such a cool thing and very, you know, admirable about that, your persistence and everything. That's very, very cool. I have go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say what was fun about the show too is like they had very set personalities for us. You know, like I was very pink and girly and kind of emotional. Yeah. The Beauty and Brains was the thing that they gave me. and they kind of wanted you to stick to like who you were. Mm-hmm. But both Hef and the executive producer of the show, Kevin Burns, were both super into Halloween. And I, you know, that's my favorite holiday ever. And I'm into all the spooky. So sure. I was always able to incorporate that whole part of my personality because they also loved it.
Wow, that worked out. What was the favorite party that you hosted or threw, or what were some of those details what was that like?
Oh, for sure. The Halloween parties at the mansion, because they are still to this day probably the best parties in the world. I mean, the haunt, they take the tennis court and make it into a giant haunted house, but it's like state of the art, like TV producers and directors and like big companies that make the huge animatronics and stuff like that are like in control of that haunted house, and they do it all up and they do an incredible job. There's every inch of the mansion is decorated elaborately. It's just so incredible. And then, you know, all the celebrities at the party, and it's just the best party possible in every way.
Wow. That's who is like your favorite? You are a celebrity, but who is one of your favorite celebrities that you got to meet over the years that you're like, that person right there, like that's, you know, I vibe with that person.
Oh, that's always hard.
I'm sure there's so many, but
there's a lot. Cause there's like, you know, there's comedians and then there's musicians and there's actors. And so there's like so many different types of celebrities that come up.
Yeah.
I think that like Jenny McCarthy was really fun and she liked hanging out with us and dancing with us and stuff. So she was fun. Yeah, there's just so many. And like, after we get done with this, I'll be like thinking of like five other people I should have said. Course. But like, she's one of the first people that comes to mind. That was really fun. Of course, Paris Hilton's at every party. And gosh, I mean, there's so many people. Leonardo DiCaprio was there and Tobey Maguire and like lots and lots of people.
What is it like for you, Ed, like in your shoes? Like, you have a very different career. So what is it like when you're talking to people or friends and you tell them like what your sister does, and like how does that usually go for you? Because I was astonished when you told me. I was like, what?
Yeah, well, what He's I, like, what it I doesn't told come you up. Was,
yeah, I never What's bring that? It up.
I said it. You try to make it not come up.
No, I don't avoid it at all. when we were talking about possibly doing another podcast together, I teased, yeah, if we do that, I'll tell you how Hugh Hefner paid for my mortuary school.
That's how that came up. Tell us that story. I would love to hear that.
The teaser's better than the story.
Eddie's Bridget, ratting me out.
Yeah, Bridget gave me money for school when she was getting her graduate degree.
That's so nice.
It was out of that money that she received. Yeah. It was extra money. And since he paid for her school, he paid for mine. So
yeah.
Oh, you know, the teaser's better than the story.
Oh, Bridget, do you think you would ever go and shadow Ed for a day? Like, has that ever crossed your mind to be like, I want to see what he does? Because I'm sure you'd be interested in a lot of the stuff that he has going some days.
I think I would love to. I don't think I can legally do that, but I would love to.
If you had interest in going to mortuary school, that's all you got to say. I'm interested in mortuary school.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
People have shadowed me before, you know. Obviously I know Bridget, but you know, when I just vet people, you know, do like a job interview and try to get to know their actual intentions and then ease them into it, you know. But but it has happened, sure.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So that's your invitation right there, Bridget.
Yeah.
Well, I'm fascinated in, so you don't have any real like mortuary ghost stories? Because I would love to do so I used to have a paranormal podcast that I'm bringing back again, but I would love to have like morticians on who have like paranormal experiences while on the job.
I have one, and I still can't explain it. So there's no like really crazy ending, but there is this.
Your brother, don't bother.
It's not. It's real this time. So there's in our main chapel, we've renovated since then. But back in the day, you know, you have the giant drapes that go behind the casket, like a lot of the old school funeral homes have. And there was a sliding door that would be behind the casket for, I don't, honestly don't know even the purpose of it. So easy in and out, but there's these drapes that covered it every day. So it was never, ever touched and never opened. And there was this one day the door was like halfway open. And I think it was my uncle's like, who's moving this door open and closed? Like, we never touch that door. It's literally a hallway that no one touches. And it's behind the casket. Everyone says no. And then he closes it. And he said every week he would go and check it. And every time the door was open, he was like, he would be getting pissed off. He'd be like, who is messing with me? Like, I know one of you guys are opening and closing this door and leaving it the same exact length, halfway open every single week. I'm closing it every week. And everyone is like, I'm telling you, hand to God, I'm not touching it. So that is one that I cannot place besides something weird going on, because it was like, everyone was like, I looking him dead in the eyes. I am not touching that door. Like, I'm telling you right now. So yeah. maybe it was my dad playing a joke and he's held it in this whole time, but I don't think so. I think there was something funky going on.
Where was your brother?
He was not not involved at that point. So I that would be an easy suspect for sure.
Yeah.
I think you should go down that route though. I think that's fun. Like, people love that sort of stuff. It's really engaging, and a lot of people resonate with that because they have an experience, or they know that there's something else going on and they can feel it. I think some people are more perceptive to that too than others.
I'm curious, when you're doing an embalming, and either one of you can answer this question, do you ever like sense that the person is there with you, or hear them, or not hear them in the sense that they're like right next to you or anything like that, or trying to scare you, but like maybe like hear their voice or sense their personality, or like feel like they're in your head at all?
Ed?
Or watching what you're doing, or like,
yeah, there's actually a lot of times when I'm embalming somebody and I find myself explaining what I'm doing, like internally, I'm not talking out loud. But I'm explaining to the person what I'm doing. And I'm not consciously doing that. I catch myself doing it.
Yeah.
I catch myself like in conversation with them. Like, just, and I don't know if I'm actually having a conversation with a spirit in my, or if it's just in my own head that I'm having this right. dialogue, you know. Maybe I should start listening to music.
That's what I was going to say, Bridget. Was like, I tuned it out with music and podcasts all the way at level 10. But no, I definitely feel feel that like experience of like something greater than you going on. And like the way I give it perspective is that I'm doing it for your family. Like I'm trying to make your body, your human body, look as best as it can in your family's eyes so they could have like the best amount of closure. But I definitely feel like that sense. I haven't had quite, you know, that conversational level, but I do feel that aura that's over you sometimes. And what I want to do on the podcast, I want to go to someone like a tarot card reader or something like that and not tell the person that I am who I am, like a mortician, and see what happens and what they come up with. Because I remember back in the day, I was watching a show and she was reading cards or something, and she had someone call in and like, oh my gosh, you have like 1,000 souls like on you right now. And the guy was like, I'm a mortician. This is so weird. So I want to see if that will happen to me.
Yeah, that would be fascinating.
Sure would. Sure would. Well, I think this has been so much fun. I can't thank you both enough for taking the time to join us. Bridget, I want to give you just the deepest shout out for doing this, and Ed for connecting. Like, so much fun. You got to listen to her podcast, watch the old shows, get involved. And then you gave that little teaser about hopefully a new podcast. So I think that'd be really fun. And a lot of people would get a lot of joy out of that too.
Yeah, I hope so. I love ghost stories. So I love telling them. I love sharing them.
Yep. And this was quite the ghostly, spooky experience for all of our listeners here today. So Bridget, Matt, thank you so much for joining. What a fun time I had.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Michael.